news, information, opinions, history, and most importantly, always real. This is Rant EM Radio.
And welcome to the Lex Podcast, episode 23, Married Movie Reviews. This is actually number 13. Lex is a little under the weather, not feeling so great in the vocal area, so I'm kind of taking the lead on this one.
Hi.
Are you going to say hello?
I got a raw throat tonight, so you're going to be doing most of the talking, and I will talk whenever I need to talk. I'm actually feeling better than yesterday. We were supposed to record yesterday, but I was feeling too bad to record. And so we saved it for tonight, which it doesn't matter to you guys because it comes out the same day. So.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know, you're going to take the lead on this one, and I'm going to kind of calm myself down for a bit. But hello to everybody out there.
And I have no idea what I'm doing. Obviously, I've been a part of every one of these, but I realize, like, I don't really pay attention to
the structure of everything.
She's
at the control board tonight.
I am. I feel very awkward, so bear with us. So, first we're going to go over the box office for the weekend of September 26th through the 28th. Today, for us recording, it is now October 2nd, so we're gearing up for another weekend. Hmm. What do you think was first?
I know what was
first. Oh, you saw this already. Darn it. The Equalizer pulled in $34 million over the weekend.
It's a pretty good opening.
Yeah, not bad. Second was Maze Runner, which did $17 million.
In its second week.
Which, yeah, is in its second week and has now totaled just shy of $58 million.
It's not bad.
Yeah, not too shabby. Third is The Box Trolls, which in its first weekend brought in $17 million. Fourth, we have This Is Where I Leave You, which is actually in its second week. It pulled in 6.8 and brings its total up to 22.
Which we still haven't seen yet.
Yeah, we have not seen that one yet, and it looks like they're not bringing that to our theater this weekend yet. Number five, Dolphin Tale 2, brought in 4.7 in its third week, so totaling 33. Sixth was No Good Deed, which brought in 4.5, totaling 46 in its third week. I don't even know what it's about. Walk Among the Tombstones is 7 with 4.1, bringing its total to 20 in its second week. Guardians of the Galaxy is still hanging on at number 8, brought in 3.7 to bring its total to $319 million in its ninth week. Number nine, Let's Be Cops, which is still hanging on, brought in 1.5, bringing its 7 week total up to 79.
That's crazy to me.
It is, yeah. And then finally, at number 10, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which brought in 1.5, bringing its eighth week totals up to 187.
Yeah. So, one movie I want to talk about that's not on the list that opened this past weekend is the movie Tusk.
Kevin Smith's film.
Yes, it's a horror comedy from Kevin Smith. Basically, the idea, the premise was kind of thought up during a podcast that he was doing, and they went with it, and they saw it to the end, and they got distribution for it. It did terribly. As you can see, it didn't even show up.
Yeah, this list shows top 12, not even on there.
It was only shown in 600 theaters around there, so not a whole lot of theaters. But a lot of people were getting on him because, that was a failure, blah, blah, blah.
Him as in Kevin Smith?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so a lot of people was like, well, it did lousy, on its first day. And he actually has a podcast that he does every week, or not every week, but frequently called Hollywood Babylon. So during this, he explained everything. He said that basically yeah, it did poor at the box office and everything. But before they even put it out in theaters, they had already signed a deal with Amazon and Hulu and so on and so forth to basically the movie has paid for itself already before going into theaters. So everybody's in the black and everybody has their money already. Mm-hmm. So he's like, you know, you can say it failed if you want. It doesn't really matter because, you know, everybody's made their money back already. But it does suck that it did that. And then he goes on to say, but the cool thing about Tusk is because of Tusk, I got my money to finance Clerks 3.
No way!
Yeah. So
that is cool.
So basically, Clerks 3 is... it's been done. The script has been done for quite some time.
Really? Yeah. Any idea as to what the plot is supposed to be?
He's
or
being
what the
secretive
premise is?
About it, of course.
Interesting.
So. But now he has the money to actually see it through and get it done. And so I don't... he's making three movies about Canada. One was Tusk.
About Canada or set in?
Set in, but like... you know,
okay.
Because it's set in, it's kind of about Canada.
Okay.
They call it, like, the Great White North Trilogy or something like that.
All
right. The second one's a movie that's in production right now, that's shooting right now. It's called Yoga Hosers. I really don't know too much about it. And then the third one is called Moose Jaws. It's like Jaws, but with a moose.
What?
I don't even know how that...
okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so he's going to make those three movies, and then he'll
And
do
you know
first.
What's actually funny is he's done some spoof things. The show Degrassi, The Next Generation, mm-hmm. he did a cameo, and they were filming at the school.
Right.
And there's a scene where Jay is in the principal's office, played by Alanis Morissette, and it seems very much similar to the things that you just said about the Great White North and Moose and... all that, so I wonder if that's gonna somewhat in any way, shape, or form tie in.
Yeah, I don't know. But
that is interesting.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring up that related to the box office news, but we actually have some other news stories, and yesterday, actually a lot of news stories broke today. There are two news stories that I had set up for yesterday, and then I added two more that were actually broke early last night or today. So go ahead and go through those.
So the one that I am the most, like, confused about is a Tetris movie is in the works.
Right.
WTF.
Just
when you thought there were no more viable brand names for Hollywood to exploit, the Wall Street Journal scored bonus points by reporting that a movie based on the classic video game Tetris is game on for Threshold Entertainment. And no, it will not just be big, blocky, geometric objects falling and rotating for 2 hours. It's a very big, epic sci-fi movie, CEO Larry Kasnoff said. This isn't a movie with a bunch of lines running around the page. We're not giving feet to the geometric shapes. I don't get it. I don't really know how they can do that.
It just sounds like they're kind of making, using the name to kind of draw people in, you know. And
I would not pay to see a movie called Tetris.
Well, I don't know if they're going to call it Tetris, per se, but, like, maybe the Tetris Wars or something like
we
that.
We have a story behind Tetris, quotes,
yeah.
Which makes it more much more imaginative things. We certainly have the canvas for location-based entertainment based on the epicness. What you will see in Tetris is the teeny tip of an iceberg that has intergalactic significance.
I mean, it would make sense because Tetris is a Russian thing. It came from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And the backstory on Tetris... everybody remembers it as a Nintendo game. It's a Game Boy game. It's a NES game that they played when they were younger. Tetris is actually not, like, locked down by one company. Back in the day, there was actually a few companies that made Tetris for the Nintendo and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So it's not a Nintendo title, which kind of, I'm guessing why this is being made, because I don't think Nintendo themselves would say, yeah, let's make this. I could be wrong, but yeah, it's going to be interesting because I doubt it'll have anything to do, because Tetris doesn't have a story. The story behind Tetris is very interesting, and I'd almost right. like to see them do a biopic about that because of how interesting that is, but you know, unfortunately, it sounds like they're just going for some space gimmick.
So the other one of these four stories that kind of threw me off is that there is going to be an Angry Birds movie.
Right.
Rovio and Sony Pictures have got it cast and everything going. Set to debut July 1st, 2016. It's going to be voiced by Jason Sudeikis as the Red Bird, Bird with a Temper, Josh Gad as Speedy Chuck, and Danny McBride as the Bomb. Supporting voices will be Bill Hader, Maya Rudolph, Peter Dinklage, Ike Barinholtz, Jillian Bell. Not all of those names are familiar to me, but...
So most of them are familiar to me.
Yeah.
Jason Sudeikis, SNL
Horrible
guy.
Bosses, We're the Millers.
Yeah.
Josh Gad played, did the voice of Olaf from Frozen.
See, I didn't know his name.
Like, you know, I think he has a really good voice for doing cartoony things, but...
Danny McBride is Kenny Powers from Eastbound and Down. Who else was there?
Bill Hader.
Bill Hader's SNL. He's also a writer on South Park.
He's
going
to play a pig. Maya Rudolph.
SNL.
SNL and Bridesmaids. Peter Dinklage, Game of Thrones.
Yeah, the little guy. I almost said midget.
Ike Barinholtz also...
He was a Mad TV guy.
Yeah. And Jillian Bell, this says she was on 22 Jump Street.
Yeah, I don't know.
Danielle Brooks from Orange is the New Black. YouTube stars will be in it.
But let's wrap our head around what an Angry Birds movie could make in the box office.
Oh, tons of money.
Do you think it'll be over $100,000? Do you think it'll be a phenomenon? Or because from what I've seen, Angry Birds fat has kind of died
down.
Yeah,
I think it's died down definitely. But, you know, who knows? You're probably going to get those kids who see the commercial and they're like, Mom, we have to go.
Yeah.
You know, now, whether or not they're super into it now or not.
Right. Our son was into it. Now he's not really into it. But, like, if he sees Angry Birds, he knows what they are.
Yeah, and I think that that's one that he'd want to go see.
Probably, yeah. There is a cartoon out there already, so I don't know how well that does, but yeah.
No idea. Another is that Netflix has set Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, The Green Legend as its first film.
This is really interesting here.
Now, Netflix has been doing a lot of their own original series.
Like television shows, except for not television.
Right.
Miniseries.
So they've been doing that for a while now. They've got a couple, House of Cards, Hemlock Grove. They also did a spinoff of an Australian show, H2O, Just Add Water, which is about mermaids. So, you know, some
Orange
like...
is the New Black.
Yeah, random things like that. So
most
this is
of
interesting.
Them, or a couple of them, have been critically acclaimed. Like, House of Cards is widely praised.
As Orange is the New Black.
Hemlock Grove, not so much. But it's obvious that, like, not only just Netflix, but with, like, TV miniseries, or not even miniseries... I guess you can throw that in, too, but just television as a whole is becoming a lot more cinematic, because you get the TV shows like Breaking Bad and, like, Sons of Anarchy, and those shows wouldn't be able to be shown on television 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
Because it's just...
too much.
Yeah, obviously, way too much. And then you get miniseries like Fargo last year, which I really liked, and... would put over a lot of different movies that I've seen recently. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, this form of storytelling is becoming a lot more pertinent because it is episodic, you know, you can, and the great thing about Netflix is they put it all up at once.
Yeah. So you can binge watch over a weekend.
You don't have to wait a week you just have to wait until they're all released and then boom, you can go. This is interesting because not only is this like the first film Netflix is doing, mm-hmm. And Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon obviously hasn't been relevant for a long time, but when it was a very...
But people know about it.
It was a very highly praised film.
Yeah.
You know, and people loved it.
And this is saying that it'll premiere exclusively on Netflix and in selected global IMAX theaters on August 28th, 2015. So that's actually
now,
pretty
soon. Now, here's the thing about
it. Film.
Here's the thing, the story that's not in this story that actually came later is that Regal and Cinemark theaters refused to show this movie.
Really?
Yep, in their IMAX theaters because of Netflix.
Oh.
Because they think Netflix is trying to kill off the theater business.
Interesting.
So instead of trying to make some money off of it by showing it in their theaters, they're mm-hmm. just opting not to make any money at all,
wow.
being stubborn and taking a stance. I don't know how you feel about that, but I think it's stupid of them because you have...
Yeah, for sure.
This is not going to stop. This is going to become stronger and stronger. We kicked cable about mm-hmm. 3 years ago.
Right.
Because it just was not... You're paying $70 to $80 a month. You know, and hey, you get great shows and you get a DVR and that's cool.
And for us, though, we would record shows mm-hmm. so that we could, on Saturday, when we don't have a ton of stuff right. going on, could sit down and watch everything. So we'd watch everything on a Saturday anyway. And now with Hulu in existence, I can still do that. If something airs on Sunday, I can watch it Monday night at my leisure.
Hulu and Netflix, $20 a month.
Not even. $7.99, so we're paying less than $16 for both of these, and we still watch everything that we want to watch every month.
Round up, say $20 a month. Not only do we get TV shows, but we get movies. We just don't get them when they release.
Right.
But if Netflix is going to do more stuff like this, it doesn't really matter because we're seeing a lot of new content before anybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
It does suck because I'm still waiting on American Horror Story, Coven.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that aired like a year ago and it's still not up.
Mm-hmm.
Comic Book Man. I actually have a new app on my phone called Time Hop. And what it does is actually shows you what you posted a year ago on Facebook and 2 years ago and stuff like that. Yesterday it showed me Comic Book Man, or the other day it showed me Comic Book Man. I posted, oh yay, season 2 is up. Well, it just got up and it was the same day that season 3 went up. So it was actually 1 year to the date.
Interesting.
So that, yeah, it was interesting. But then you throw in specialty networks like the WWE Network, who've mm-hmm. got their own thing now. And that's, you know, $10 a month if you commit. It's always what we wanted to do with cable. We wanted to
pick
our channels,
mm-hmm.
right? Now we're getting to do that as more and more companies realize that subscription models are probably the way to go.
Now, if I could just pay $8 a month for my HBO, I'd be happy. But, yeah, so this is really interesting, and if they're going to start doing this, then who knows, you know, what the future will bring.
I think we'll get some really cool stuff.
So. Yeah. And then I'm saving this one for last because I'm figuring you're going to have the most to say about it, but Adam Sandler is going to make 4 movies exclusively for Netflix. So Netflix will be the exclusive home of 4 feature films starring and produced by Adam Sandler, this company announced today. His films have grossed more than $3 billion globally at the box office and made him one of the world's top movie stars. He's among the few actors in the world whose films consistently rank among the most viewed by Netflix members in the U.S. and across its global territories from Brazil to the U.K. So this is interesting. It says that under the deal, which was just announced today, his Happy Madison Productions is going to work alongside Netflix to develop the 4 films and premiere them exclusively to members in nearly 50 countries where Netflix operates. Current studio film commitments are not included in this deal.
I want to get your take on this before I talk about it. I want to hear your thoughts.
I think Sandler has kind of had ups and downs in his career. You know, when he started with SNL, he, you know, had some really memorable characters, and then he did some really great films in the 90s. Like, everybody, I'm assuming, everybody has seen, you know, Happy Gilmore. Everybody has, you know, watched Billy Madison, have seen Big Daddy. And, you know, like, those things that, even still, even though I've seen tons of other stuff of him, when people say Adam Sandler, those are the films that I think of. Because
right.
that, to me, is, like, classic Sandler.
Because that's kind of when he first got out, and his, you know, we were seeing his stuff for the first time. It's like mm-hmm. a lot, you know, a lot of different actors or comics. You see their stuff for the first time. It's new, and it's mm-hmm. something that you're enamored with. After you see it for a while and start to learn his tricks and start to say, oh, okay, he does that over and over again.
Right.
He's like, okay. But the funny thing with Adam Sandler is there's a lot of different Adam Sandlers. There's what you were talking about in the early 90s, kind of the goofy Adam Sandler, character-driven Adam Sandler.
Mm-hmm.
There's also dramatic Adam Sandler in films like Punch Drunk Love and The Spanglish and... You know, those type of films, he can do that. Even Funny People was dramatic to an extent. But he's fallen into an odd place, I think. We're not really willing to accept Adam Sandler of old, because we've gotten to a point where we got saturated with silliness in comedy movies, and so silliness doesn't really work. You'll see people leaning more towards the vulgar comedy films of Judd Apatow or, you know, Seth Rogen, or, you know, that's kind of what people, you know, 22 Jump Street, that's kind of what people like these days, because they've been saturated with the silliness, and now they like people dropping obscenities and doing drugs and stuff like that.
Yeah, the things that people think are funny have definitely shifted as well, so I can see that people try to adapt to that, but...
See, I'm not in that group. I still find that kind of silly funny. Not to the extent, because, believe me, I'm not sticking up for a lot of his films. Grown Ups, that series was awful.
I haven't even seen any of them.
It's
no desire.
Not good. And then, you know, there's other ones like Jack and Jill
like...
and stuff like that. You
know? In more recent times, though, he has had some good stuff. I liked him in I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. I liked him in 51st Dates.
I hated 51st
really?
Dates. But that was
Click,
early 2000s.
Which is what we saw on our very first date years ago.
Yeah, so...
Aww.
But you gotta understand, Happy Madison is not just Adam Sandler films. It's other films, too. It's The Benchwarmers was a Happy Madison production with Adam Sandler not anywhere in the movie at all. Mm-hmm. Not even a cameo, right? You know, and there's been others, too. I can't think of them offhand, but... I think it's good because I like their brand of humor. I like their movies because they aren't vulgar to the point of, you know, I have to question why I'm sitting here watching this. I don't feel dirty afterwards, you know, and maybe that's just me because that's how I am. And some people aren't, you know, they don't feel dirty after watching this. They get a kick out of it and they really enjoy it. But we'll talk about Blended a little more later and why I think Blended is a good representation to see why this isn't a bad story, because I've seen nothing but negative feedback about this. People saying that...
About Sandler and Netflix?
Yeah, because people don't like Sandler. They think he's fallen off. They think, you know, he's a hack. Mm-hmm. This and that. I mean, if you... Yeah, I can... Rarely can you count on more than one hand great comedies from one person. Sandler is one of those. You're talking about Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, The Wedding Singer, The Water Boy, Big Daddy. You know, some people liked Click quite a bit. It's just, you know, he's got a proven track record of success. And that's, even if it's, even if it was way back when, I think he's starting to find that again about what made him and his movies more special.
And I think that there's not an actor, you know, out there that hasn't had, you know, the one or two or five duds, but then, you know, gone on to be super successful.
Right.
Like Melissa McCarthy, I think, is a good example. She is great when she is the sidekick character, but not so great as the lead, such as in Tammy.
Hey, Chris Farley had duds. Beverly Hills Ninja, I hated.
And you're a fan.
Yeah, exactly. I love Tommy Boy. I love Black Sheep. Beverly Hills Ninja was rotten. It was really bad. And, you know, so, I mean, it's not one person. And it's going to happen to guys like Seth Rogen, where... It's going to become tiresome. To me, it's already tiresome, but it's going to be lame, and it's going to be... Everybody's going to be looking for the new guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's even started to happen with that... gosh, I don't remember his name. Dave Franco?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think he started to kind of push his way in and, you know, take a lot of... Kind of taking the vulgar Seth Rogen thing and molding it into a good-looking guy doing kind of the same things, but with a little more zaniness to him.
Gotcha.
I don't know. That's just me. But I think this deal with Netflix is good. It's technically... It's not technically free, but it's free. You know? What do you get? You know, you pay $8 for Netflix, you get your money's worth with other things that you watch. So when you get to the Sandler films, it's basically like you're watching them for free.
And it's curious too, because $8 is what most people pay to go see a film. You know, in some big cities, like, that's the matinee price, whereas full price is, like, $14, $15.
Right, right.
So even if you did Netflix for 1 month to watch, you know, this Crouching Tiger movie, and then you canceled it, and then a couple months later, you pay your $8 to watch the one Adam Sandler film, you know, like, it's still...
Which I don't recommend to anybody getting rid of Netflix, because it's the be-all, end-all. Even if... The problem with me and Netflix is that there's so much to watch that I can't pick what to watch, and I end up wasting my time, and then I get upset, and I say, screw it, I'm just going to play a game or something like that. So,
first world problems.
That's our news bits for this evening, and we'll be right back after this with our reviews of Blended, The Equalizer, and The Box Trolls.
I love it when you do that. Cracks me up. We'd like to thank you for listening to the Lex Podcast and remind you that you can check us out on Facebook and Instagram. So go to facebook.com/marriedreviews or instagram.com/marriedreviews. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, The Wedding Singer, and Big Daddy, four of my all-time favorite comedies. Ask just about anyone else, and they'd probably list at least one of those. In the 90s, Adam Sandler was the man. The new millennium, however, hasn't been so kind to the former SNL cast member. Misses like Grown Ups, Jack and Jill, Just Go With It, have moviegoers scratching their heads as to what the hell happened. I must admit, I wasn't very excited to see Blended, but I'm glad to say that I walked away happy that I did see it. The first half of Blended shows us the Adam Sandler of old. Quick jokes and jabs that catch you off guard, with a dash of sentiment involved. Unfortunately, the second half of the film plays more like recent Sandler, with CGI animals and eye-rolling stereotypical material. There is more good than bad in Blended, and I want to be harsher on the film than I really feel. I like Blended. I've seen it twice now, and I want to see it again down the road. But, if you don't like Sandler... There's nothing in here that's going to change your mind. 3 out of 5 for me. And this film I actually saw first week of June, I think, when we first got our movie passes. So this was either the first or second film that I saw. It might have been the first one. And I went into it kind of feeling like most people I've seen, you know, like Sandler now is not the Sandler of old, blah, blah, blah. And what I found was actually pretty good. Again, I recommend the film, but I don't think I can rate it higher than the 3 just because there are some things in there that are quite questionable. It's like he's a recovering alcoholic, and he does pretty good most of the time. But every once in a while, you can smell like a beer on his breath, even though he's not drunk. And it's kind of that's kind of an odd comparison, but... It's like this.
I was wondering
film,
where you were going with that.
Well, this film, in this film, he's kind of like Sandler of old, almost about 75% through the film. But every once in a while, it's that recent Sandler peeking his head with the giraffe tongue down the boy's throat, or riding on emus, and you know, just silly, really, really silly stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that involves CGI and
right.
And it's funny because. This film is... This is a kind of a long film. This is 2 hours, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And for a comedy, for me, that's pretty long. Because most comedies don't have a story that can sustain 2 hours. What this does is it kind of breaks it up. I think the first two-thirds of the movie takes place here in the United States. Well...
No.
No, okay. So the first two-thirds of the movie takes place here in the U.S. The second two-thirds... Or second third of the movie... I'm confusing myself now. Second third of the movie takes place in Africa, and then they come back to the U.S. for the third.
So, U.S., Africa, U.S.
Yes. And I think it's when they go to Africa that things... It's tough to say, because that's where things soured for me, but at the same time, it was kind of critical to do so, because it didn't move plot points along.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't bash it too much, I guess. It's just there's a lot of really silly stuff in there. I like Terry Crews, but I didn't really like him in
his
this.
Role in this was
it's funny
ridiculous.
At first. It's funny at first, but then it becomes way like there's way too much of him and his singing group basically butting into, you know, half the scenes. And
I didn't like that they made him a little bit stereotypical of in some
well,
of
all
aspects.
The Africans were stereotypical. And
but it was, like, in your face ridiculous.
It was, but at the same time, it was kind of supposed to be because it was a resort for Americans or foreigners, you know? Yeah. So it's kind of like, oh, they're expecting this type of African. Let's be this to make their stay better. You know, maybe that's looking into it a bit too much, I guess. But really, the problems I had with it were those few problems of CGI. And I can't really understand why I marked it so low. I just think if they would have cut those out, I could have given this a 4, probably, pretty easily. And also, I just, the African stuff, what didn't interest me all that much, and the way that they got there
but
is kind of...
if you think about it, though, this...
questionable.
This bit where they're in Africa could have really happened anywhere. It could have been Paris. It could have been Australia.
And
it
it's kind
know,
of like
anywhere.
A, it's kind of like a...
that just happened to be the place.
Well, it's all. It also kind of plays like a commercial for Africa. Come stay at our resorts.
Yeah, some parts
like
of
that.
It.
You know, it's kind of... and that's why I don't think it's too genuine of a comedy. I think it's... they do some stuff. It's pretty outlandish when you think about it.
Well, yeah.
You know, so... I think that's what hindered it. But I think if you go into this movie kind of wiping your slate clean and actually giving it a shot, there are moments in this where Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore kind of find their chemistry of old mm-hmm. a bit. There's some scenes where they don't. And I'm not a huge fan of Drew Barrymore.
I think it works, though, because the characters are supposed to kind of dislike each other, you know, downright hate each other at first, and then they're kind of forced into a situation, so they become, you know, tolerant of each other.
I just didn't buy the love angle as much as I did in The Wedding Singer, you know what I mean? I think they played very well off each other in comedy bits, like when they're at the store. I think that's fantastic. Yeah. It's probably one of the best scenes in the film. When they're kind of... you know, when she's carrying her son in and he's asleep and
smacking
banging
his
him
head everywhere.
Right, exactly. You know, and you get that Sandler charm and you get that Drew Barrymore mm-hmm. klutzy girl, you mm-hmm. know, charm. I think the opening scene of the film is very funny when they're at Hooters.
Yeah.
And it's I think it's funny because you don't really know much about it. It kind of just slings you in here mm-hmm. and they pair them up right away.
And they're so on a blind date.
Right, they're on Sandler and Barrymore are on a blind date and he takes her to Hooters. And you just think, well, this guy's, you know, a meathead.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a reason why he takes her to Hooters in the end. And
yeah.
They really tried to connect, go back and connect certain parts of the stories.
And I appreciated that as a person who likes to have all of my ends tied up. And I actually really liked this. It's one of those things, because you saw it in theaters and I didn't, you decided that since we're now doing these reviews, as the four movies that you saw that I didn't come out available for renting, we'll watch them and then be able to review them.
And vice versa. The one movie I didn't see,
which was
X-Men.
So you saw Blended, Neighbors, The Edge of Tomorrow, and Million Ways to Die in the West. Did not see any of those. Right. So this is the first of those four that we're reviewing.
Yeah.
The one that I saw that you hadn't was X-Men.
Yeah, I guess I should have stated this is already out on DVD.
And yeah, this is available now. You can get it at Redbox even. That's where we got it.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know what to think. And I was actually, when you said Blended is out, we got to watch it. I was like, God, I don't want to. But I actually,
which
you know, same as you.
Untypical.
Yeah, it's not, I like to whine, deal with it. I was pleasantly surprised. I actually really enjoyed this, and I'm giving it a 3.5 because I don't have the same qualms about it that you do.
See,
of
that's
course, there were
surprising,
things.
Surprising because I think I'm more attached to Sandler than you are because you're not, like, you might like those mid to late 90s films.
But yeah, I'm not in love with them like you
them.
Are.
Like, as a kid, I watched a lot of them over and over and over again on VHS. Happy Gilmore, The Water Boy, and Big Daddy were all films that, and Billy Madison even, I watched like every night before bed. And it was, they're kind of comforting. They're like the quilt of comedy. Sandler is. I mean, it's like putting a nice warm blanket over you because it's familiar, but it's also something from the past that's still living. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have Farley anymore. David Spade doesn't really do any comedies anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you've got a hole from that generation missing.
Right.
And when Sandler comes back in, he brings his pals along. So Kevin Nealon is in this film, which he gets a little annoying, but still, it's nice to see him in there. The ginger, I thought was hilarious. The ginger character, Kevin Nealon's girlfriend.
Okay. Romantic.
Yeah. I thought she was hilarious.
Me too.
And
even the kids that, you know, the actors that played his children, her children, I thought that they did really well.
Yeah, I do want to say that, too, because I think that's one of the things that tugged on my heartstrings is the kids had endearing characters. You know, one is a tomboy because her dad wants her to be a basketball player, the son he never had type of deal.
Right, because he has three girls.
Right. And
she has two boys.
You know, her name is Hillary, but he calls her Larry.
Mm-hmm. You know. And then the middle child, I could not believe it, but her name is Espen, as in ESPN.
Right. And she's kind of a tomboy, too. She got the shaggy haircut, and she talks to the dead mom, you know, with the family. So she's got her own issues going. And the little one is just too young to kind of really have any issues, but she's the charismatic
super adorable
one.
Too.
And so I think a lot of the characters do have maybe not crazy depth to them, but like a lot of depth.
They were all believable, I think.
They gave them all something to do.
Yeah. A lot of times you have those cardboard cutout characters that are just there for the sake of being there, and I don't feel like they used any of the main people in this in that way.
And then there's also Joel McHale in this, and he just plays the most believable asshole in the world.
Yeah.
Like
I wanted to reach through the TV and punch him myself.
He does a fantastic job, and it's the second film. I told you there was two films that he was in, like, pretty close together, and this and Deliver Us from Evil. And I liked him in both of those films, and plays completely different characters.
Yeah, totally different.
And I think he did a good
different
job.
Different genres.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll wrap this one up now, and I really do recommend Blended. 3.5, or 3 out of 5 for me. Doesn't really sound like a ringing endorsement, but I do want people to check it out that are kind of soured on Sandler, because this is not Jack and Jill, and this is not, you know, Just Go With It or whatever. It's
not crap.
It's a hybrid. It's some of his newer stuff. It's some of his grown up stuff, but it's also and grown ups the movie, not grown up stuff. And it's kind of harkens back to, you know, a little bit of The Wedding Singer, relationship wise. So take a look at it. I recommend it. Obviously, 3.5 for you. Recommend it as well.
And again, because it is available out on DVD and Blu-ray, go grab it from Redbox. Spend a buck on it.
Try it
first. Try it out.
I'm sure it'll be on Netflix in a couple months or so.
Yeah.
So. But I think it is worth a watch. Maybe not go out and buy it right now on Blu-ray or whatever, but, you know, check it out.
Based on a book called Here Be Monsters by Alan Snow, The Box Trolls is a story of a young boy called Eggs who is raised underground by a group of junk-collecting creatures. The town exterminator, Snatcher, will do anything to get rid of the box trolls and take his place as one of the town council's white hats. Even lie about the box trolls' nature. Eggs is voiced by newcomer Isaac Hempstead Wright and is assisted by the fiery Winnie, who is voiced by Elle Fanning, and she helps set things straight about the true intentions of the box trolls. This has some awesome animation, and we have familiar voices such as Sir Ben Kingsley, Jared Harris, Nick Frost, and more, and that makes this a fun yet dark children's film. I give this a 3.5.
I give it a 3. I didn't like it
too
much.
You are not a fan.
I think
I have to ask, was it because it's all British accents? Because you have a thing about accents.
I don't think it's the British accents. I think it's the British culture that I didn't connect with. It's very British culture. I mean, when you boil it down, the main story is about acceptance and, you know, not trying to be someone you're not, just to be looked at as, you know, someone with the white hat, you know, mm-hmm. as someone higher up. So this villain, Snatcher, he wants the white hat. He wants to sit. And all the white hats do, they're supposed to be like the council for the city.
Mm-hmm.
All
and they I think do, that he's like, Winnie's dad is like the mayor sort yeah. of role.
And all they do is sit in a room and eat cheese. Yeah. And talk about cheese and stuff like that. And so Snatcher wants it. Turns out Snatcher is actually allergic to cheese.
Just got some
so
funny scenes.
So obviously, you know, it's a thing of he wants to be accepted and he'll do anything, even eat cheese, which he's allergic to. To get
just
there.
Just fit in, yeah.
So, in that sense, it's a pretty typical thing. We've seen that many, many times over in children's yeah. films with villains. But it's the whole culture of everything that I just didn't connect with. It's very 1800s style. It's not,
indeed.
Like, it's not recent stuff. So, basically, with the box trolls, they were more endearing than I thought they were going to be for me. I enjoyed them more than I thought I was. The overall movie, like, the animation's great and everything, but the overall movie's kind of gross. It's just got a very gross thing to it. And, you know, this is kind of from Tim Burton's team.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not Tim Burton, but it's from his team.
Right.
So it's kind of like a very James and the Giant Peach feel to it. Where that was a film that, to me, was kind of gross, you know, even taking normal stuff, even the cheese in there was gross to me, you
yeah.
know, it's just, and even in the theater, and I don't like reviewing audiences, right, but I do want to, you know, since we're there, and since we're with a paying audience, there were even kids in there that were like, that's gross, you know, and kids are hard to gross out.
Yeah.
So it's...
Dexter just laughed.
Right, exactly.
That's funny, Mom. That's funny.
Yeah. And
shush.
It's, again, it's not going to be like everybody's going to be grossed out by it. A lot of people are going to dig it, but I just didn't find the story really all that interesting. It pretty much centralized around cheese, and I thought that was pretty ludicrous. Cheese and white hats, and I just didn't connect to that. I was like, I like cheese myself. I really do. But, you know, I don't know if I need to be in a room eating and talking about cheese. And because it's in the 1800s, it's not really anything else to do, right? So, and then the father's name is Lord Portly Rind. And, you know, it's just kind of weird
Lord
stuff.
Lord Portly Rind?
Yeah, it's weird stuff like that. I actually got a tingly sensation whenever the trolls would bang on their boxes and everything like that. Like a, because every time they're happy, they bang on their boxes.
Yeah, it's kind of like applause.
Yeah, kind of like a tribal thing.
Yeah.
And so I like the trolls. I dug their little setup, and I dug, they didn't really talk. But that was kind of weird that the kid knows perfect English, yet he was not raised around.
Suspend your belief for the world of fantasy.
How much can you suspend your belief when it's something big like that?
Yeah, well,
we're supposed to believe he's some sort of feral human because he's raised by trolls.
Why are we supposed to believe that?
Because he eats bugs.
Fish has been a good father to him and brought him up
fish
well.
Fish is great. Fish
and
is
Shrew
great.
Is the feisty little uncle.
Shrew is funny when he's offering up different things to make the boy look like a real boy, and, you know, he keeps getting turned down and everything. You know, those were like the only memorable trolls out of the lot of them.
And I think that it's kind of meant to be that way.
And that's fine.
You know, the rest
really,
just kind of blend.
I'm not knocking the film for that. Before I get to my bad points of this, I do want to say this. I thought it was funny that one... So there's Snatcher, who's the main villain,
mm-hmm.
and then he has his three lackeys. Mr. Trout, Mr. Pickles... And Mr. I don't remember the last one.
Something with the T.
Yeah, it is something with the T. But this last one didn't have a British accent. I'm like, that's weird. Okay, does he have a normal accent? Does he have a British accent? I listened closely. It was a normal accent. Then I listened a little more closely. I was like, that sounds like Tracy Morgan. Sure enough, it was Tracy Morgan. And I thought that was really odd casting. I liked it, but I thought it was pretty, like... Because the other two is Nick Frost from the Simon Pegg movies, and... Mm-hmm.
And you had mentioned that to me, so I tried listening for it when Dex and I went to see it. I didn't hear it, like, because the guy hardly spoke.
He hardly spoke.
So how did you catch that?
I don't know, I guess I just know my Tracy Morgan.
Mr. Gristle.
Mr. Gristle, okay.
Mr. Trout, Mr. Pickles, and Mr. Gristle.
Before I get to my negatives again, I just want to say that I really liked the villain. I liked Snatcher. I thought
bold Snatcher.
He looked the part.
And that was the voice of Ben Kingsley.
Yeah, he acted the part, and that was crazy too, because again, it's not like I can tell British accents apart really, but you know.
I actually thought Lord Portly Ryan was Jude Law for quite a bit.
You know who he reminded me of? The dad from the Wild Thornberries.
In his appearance, yeah.
And so
Nigel. Nigel, yeah.
Even though I think Nigel might be a different... anyway, I don't know. But Snatcher is great. And he also has a double-up character in there, too, which is very Madame British Fru-Fru. In itself. You know, kind of dressing up as a woman. A man dressing up as a woman. And so that was entertaining, but then I think everything stops there as far as entertaining goes, because I don't think the story itself was all that great, especially when they get to the point of they've captured all the trolls and you know, who else is down there hiding and, you know, what they have to do to save the town. And mm-hmm. then it just got to the point of, like, I kind of wish it was over, you know.
Gotcha.
The endearing nature of it kind of just washed away, and I was like, all right, I'm ready for this. Unless they're going to pound on their box somewhere. I'm down for that.
What did you think of Elle Fanning as the voice of Winnie? Because literally it's the exact same voice she uses as Aurora in Maleficent. Which, when I first saw previews, I was like, IMDb, is that Elle Fanning? Yeah, it is. Why? Why use an American girl putting on a British accent when there are plenty of British actresses who they could have done?
Probably.
And I'm wondering if that's what it is. Yeah, you know, another big name to draw.
Yeah, I can't tell accents apart.
You know, and it's interesting, too, because typically this sort of animation takes years.
Right, it's very tedious, and I want to really commend them on that.
Years and years. Right. So it's kind of funny because
it looked great.
It makes me think that they had to have, you know, had Elle Fanning do this way before she was cast as Aurora, so I wonder if that maybe helped.
No, I wouldn't necessarily think so, because you get the animation done and then you voice it over.
Not always. Sometimes you do the voice and then you animate around that. Like, from with what cartoons, I know, they do that a lot.
From what I know, the easiest thing is to get them in after they've animated. I guess it's... I think having the voice first is more for puppeteering.
Because I know that with a lot of, like, animated things, they will do the voice while they're animating. That way, if, you know, this line is, that's not right, it depends on the inflection of the actor. That's not right, that's not right. You know, like, that's not right. You know, depending on that, they're going to animate it to fit with it.
Right. And I think more for short-term animation, that's the way to go.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying, like, I don't know if that's
what
they would
but
have done.
But this, it's like, this. We just got to get this done because people's voices, they might change or whatever.
Yeah.
I liked it. I think it's okay.
It's a good kid movie.
A 3.5 out of 5. Again, Blenda got a 3.5 out of 5. I still recommended that. I don't recommend this, though, unless you're a big fan of Burton himself.
Real quick to clarify, you give it a 3?
3.
Okay, and I give it a 3.5. Yeah, okay, just making sure we're on the same page.
Yeah, so I think if you're a fan of Burton, I think there's cause to see this, but I don't think it's anything too special. It's not A Nightmare Before Christmas.
No, it's not good.
It's not, it doesn't have a lasting quality about it, so, but still, it wasn't too bad. I think it was better than I thought it might be. I wasn't necessarily looking forward to seeing this one, so, yeah, it's okay.
Denzel Washington leads the cast as Robert McCall, a seemingly average guy with an average job. Plagued by insomnia, Robert frequents a 24-hour diner and befriends a young girl, Alina, played by Chloe Grace Moretz. Alina is under the control of a violent Russian mobster, and he takes action to help protect her. Directed by Antoine Fuqua, who did Training Day. This film has a good story, though it can be a bit hard to believe at times, and I feel that it has some really great cinematography. While it doesn't blow me away, I think it's pretty darn good, and I'm going to give it a 4.
I give it a 3.5, and this film was actually pretty darn good until the final scenes. And I'm not even talking about
the final
scenes.
And for me, that's where, like, it got good.
No.
Just in terms of, you know, this has been kind of marketed as an action film. The trailers that we saw for it is him busting some heads and, you know, this and that. So I was kind of just waiting for that for most of the movie. So while the movie is really well done and it really sets up the characters and sets up, you know, the life and everything, it was later at the end when all the action happened that got me really, you know, on board with it, because that's what I came to see.
And I think because of how it plays out in the first 2/3 of the movie, it kind of jumps the shark in the third act.
Boo.
Seriously, though. I mean, if you're going to play the film like they did in the first 2/3, and you're going to play the film, it's like they played the first 2/3 of the film like a Law and Order type deal. You know what I mean? Like, or you know, like a TV drama where they take the whole episode to set up. The final third plays like a mix of The Expendables and Home Alone. Like, he becomes a one-man army.
I looked at him more as like a Jason Bourne character.
The first 2/3 are, I thought, maybe even a better Batman movie than the Dark Knight movies.
Ooh.
I'm serious, though. I thought that they set up the character, and that's not saying anything bad about the Dark Knight movies, because I liked them, but they set up the character so good in the first 2/3 of the film.
So well.
And then they don't pay off half the stuff that they set up. They don't really go over this OCD that he has. They just show him having OCD, but they don't say how it hinders him in any way. They don't say.
And did you even actually catch that, or was it not until I explained that
I got it, but it's okay. In him turning on and off the light at the end of the movie. But they don't say how it hinders him in any way, how it's a problem for him.
And it might not be.
Well, then why even focus so much on it?
Because that's him. That's part of how he is, who he is.
So why is it even a big deal? Like, they focus so much on it with the watch and the timing. It's just a gimmick that doesn't pay off.
I
expected it to play into something.
Again, it didn't bother me as much as it obviously bothered you.
That's a loose end, and I'm surprised it didn't bother you.
I think it's because I am somebody who has been plagued by OCD tendencies.
Right, and it's bothered. It's, like, affected your life.
Yeah, but I am aware of that and how it affects things and how it literally just becomes a part of your life to where you don't realize you're doing it half the time. So maybe that's what they were trying to show.
You were also not taking on the Russian mob.
I was not. No. And that's the thing. When you're really stressed out, OCD
right.
issues become a lot more prevalent.
I understand. I just feel like it was not explored at all, except for setting it up with his watch. Like, the watch thing was a gimmick. And I didn't even fully understand that, because he says, okay, I'm going to kill all these guys in 16 seconds. He does it, and it's like 19 seconds. And he's just
shrugged. Like 28.
Whatever. He just shrugs it off. And he's like, oh, well. And it's like, no, OCD people would not do that. That would affect them at least a little bit. They would show a little bit of anger or something.
Well, it
like
might
that.
Be because, did you notice how earlier on in the film he would do something and then he'd stop it, look at it, and kind of calculate, and then he'd start it again, go do the next thing. I think that all he was doing was trying to see, is he able to do things the same time every day?
Maybe. I don't know.
Because, like, I used to count my steps between point A and point B, and it had to be a certain number of steps or else I'd freak out. So it could
right.
just be
you'd
something
freak
like
out,
that.
But he doesn't.
Yeah,
like, he doesn't
he might
do
not
anything.
Freak out because maybe he's just like, you know, can I still do it this quickly?
But this is fiction.
Yep.
Why wouldn't you write something like that
know.
In there?
I don't know.
If you can make up your own rules, wouldn't you make the character more interesting by having some sort of conflict with this thing you've set up? And then they don't really explore what he was before.
Yeah, it's
he
not
is
until
now.
Literally, like, I don't even think it ever actually says. I mean, when he right. goes to visit the friend, it's kind of implied that he was like a CIA type guy once upon
yeah,
a
yeah, yeah. We don't even know.
But
we don't even know if he was a Navy
it.
SEAL. You know, in that case, why didn't, if he's such a badass, why didn't they send him over to find Osama bin Laden and stuff like that? You know, it's just, they never explained it to the point where your mind has to wander, and that's dangerous, because then you start saying, then you start questioning, well, why didn't this happen, or, you know, why did he kill himself, quote unquote.
It's fiction.
Right, but you have to see the plot through.
Right.
You have to see your script through, and this is why I'm docking points.
Gotcha.
Because it is it's like two-faced. It is a smart script, but at the same time, they set so many things up for themselves that they don't follow through on everything. Denzel, fantastic. You know, he plays
such really, a great character. Yeah, I was really pleased by this role.
It's such a cool character because, one, he's doing good.
Yeah, I almost looked at it as, like, he's... Like, if he got caught, would somebody really want to convict him because he was doing it for the right reasons and he only took out the bad guys?
He's a vigilante.
Definitely a vigilante, yes.
And, again, that's why I compare it to him being the Black Batman in this film. Because he is sans costume. This is a superhero movie.
Right.
It is. Yeah. It's a superhero origin, almost.
There are even some bits where he takes on a couple of guys and they're like, who are you? And, you know, he's in the shadows, so you don't...
And he don't cheese it up by saying, I'm the equalizer.
Right, you know? Yeah.
And so I thought it was such a good script until that final act where everything starts to get cheesy. Where you start to see him explode or blow up boats and then slow walk. Like, they literally, one of the biggest cliches in action movies, the explosion with the slow walk.
And that was my biggest annoyance with that because I said, nobody would slow walk that slow when everything's blowing up behind you and not at least like take a couple little quick steps to get to safety.
It's absolutely ludicrous.
But I loved the use of reflection where you see the explosion reflected in this big shiny silver tanker as he's walking by.
The
like,
shots,
that was cool.
The shots are good. It's obvious that Fuqua has a lot of talent with his shots, his direction. Especially, there was one shot, again, this isn't as, you know, glamorous as your reflection shot. There's a shot where Denzel's enemy in the film goes and poses as a cop and goes up to his house or his apartment to ask him questions. And Denzel kind of flips it around on him, which is an awesome scene setting up the character. And they shoot it from the staircase down, like up. You know, it's almost like you're with the enemy. And it's cool because it's like you're in on the moment. You know, it's not so much a scene as it is almost feeling like a documentary. But the problems are with that last bit because when they get into the final scenes, sans, you know, him making amends with someone and him basically posting on Craigslist for his services.
Yeah, that's something
which I thought was cool.
I didn't really get. It took me a second. I was like, how does anybody even know about him? Because it's just like a very simple, like, can you help? I'm in trouble or something.
The ad is, do you need help?
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes a lot more sense then because...
And someone can help me.
I was super confused. Yeah.
And he just
like,
replies
what?
With yes. And so I thought that was really cool because it is taking Craigslist, you know, modern day technology.
Right.
Something we didn't get to see in A Walk Amongst the Tombstones because I'm assuming they just didn't want that hurdle in the
film. Yeah, and you know, that was actually something that I had an issue with. Walk Among the Tombstones is like, why? What was the point? But then you did bring up the good point of...
It works for that film.
Yeah, technology could have, you know, obviously would have affected things with the whole payphone thing.
Right.
But, I liked this movie. I liked...
The villain's pretty interesting halfway through the film, and then he stops being interesting.
Well, he also dies, so you know.
No, he's okay, so we get him set up with the whole he just goes savage on a guy and punches him in the face for like a minute straight.
And then he like straightens his suit jacket and walks out.
You know, he's a good he was set up as a good villain and then they don't give him anything else to do.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and the
most
interesting
scene
after that.
It's almost like he's the middleman between Robert and the main bad
guy. But, like, the best scene they give him until the warehouse scene, or the Home Depot scene, or whatever it is.
Home Mart.
Knockoff.
Yeah. Down to the orange.
Right.
Logo.
Is when Denzel and him come face to face in the restaurant, and they start talking about, you know, Denzel starts talking about who he was in the past and everything like that. So, it does become a Home Alone movie in Home Mart.
But it was done so well. Like, I thought it was cool. I enjoyed it. Then again, I really liked Home Alone. So
there were some cool moments, and then but that scene goes on forever. Just forever. Like, they walk in with, like, three or four guys, and then he kills three or four guys, and they have, like, four or five more. And it's just like, where are these guys coming from? What, like...
Who cares?
And they don't think to stick together two by two, you know? And then,
no, because they're badasses. They don't need anybody.
And then, get this, the sprinklers come on in the warehouse, and so now it's raining, quote-unquote. Oh my god! That's what happens when you try to multitask on the podcast.
Sorry, guys. Yeah, in case anybody cares, a missing Texas girl was found in Mexico after 12 years.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So yeah, I thought the warehouse scene was ludicrous. The scene where he starts blowing stuff up is ludicrous. The scene where he's taken out all of Pushkin's men, and spoilers, I guess, but you already know we talk about spoilers on this. He takes out all of Pushkin's men. God. Like, it was cool at one point, and then they just went way over the
top.
And
that, for me, is what was the most unbelievable. You know, maybe there is a guy or so out there who could take down, you know, the whole eastern hub of the Russian mafia single-handedly. Who knows? But it just didn't feel believable.
Yeah, so I'm taking major points off for that ending. Mm-hmm. It's just, to me, was completely awful, which is not indicative of the rest of the film, which is actually really, really good. And so I'm about halfway in between. I'll give it a 3.5, and I do recommend seeing it because this is something that will probably spurn sequels.
I almost feel like this, it was set to where there could definitely be
Well, this was all based off of a television show.
Yeah, I was reading that, and it actually kind of made me a little bit curious to...
With Michael Caine as the
equalizer. Watch an episode or two, if we can find it. But, yeah, I enjoyed the film. I gave it a 4, and I think the reason that I marked it a bit higher than you is I do feel that it had some really great cinematic shots.
I
said, the reflections were used a couple times throughout. There were some really cool scenes, even though it was raining inside the building. There was some cool stuff that they were able to do with it.
I think if you're a big action fan and you get off on that kind of stuff, the ending will be cool to you, and therefore the movie throughout should be.
But even
really
if you're
good.
Not a big action fan, this movie is done so well that the bit of action that is there isn't too in your face. It's not a Michael Bay explosion film, even though there is an explosion.
It's not, but it dumbs itself down by falling into those traps. It's almost like they rush the third part of the script in writing it, and they're like, "Oh, we need this. Oh, we need this. We need, someone came to see an explosion. Let's just put this in here." So, and also, there's a bad guy in the film that was the bad guy of A Walk Among the Tombstones, playing a not as interesting character.
Okay, I was like, why does he look familiar? What have I seen him in? But there we go.
Right. But yeah, I mean, that's all I've got to say about The Equalizer. I say, don't go out and see it necessarily, but give it a rental for me. I'm sure you'd probably say go see it though in theaters.
I think so, just because like
a lot of people obviously have.
Yeah, and to me this is one of those movies that you don't really get the full effect unless you're in a theater.
Right.
You know, the way it was meant to be seen, all of that. So
some of it. Yeah.
And it makes me curious to see, so our theater only has 2 movies coming in this week. They actually started
Which I'm
tonight.
Pissed off about.
Yes, you really want Annabelle.
Yes, I do.
And, you know, maybe they're going to save
no
it a week
excuse.
And bring it, you know, a little bit closer to Halloween.
Well,
I don't know. I asked them
about it, and they're like, well, we have to wait and hear from Warner Brothers about whether or not they're
going to
give it
to
us.
So they did
reply to you? Yeah, after I tagged them.
Gotcha.
So, which is BS, because they were promoting the film. The theater was promoting the
film.
Did
you call them on that?
No, I'm not one for confrontation.
I'll do it.
No, it's fine. But it's just like, that was one of the movies I was looking forward to see. It's a wide release film, so I don't know why we wouldn't get it.
And again, it might not be that we're not going to get it, just that...
Well, why we wouldn't get it this right when it comes out, when we're getting Gone Girl right when it comes out.
Yeah, we're getting Gone Girl and Left Behind. Only 2 movies instead of 3.
Behind,
I do not want to see it either, and I think for me, it's strictly because of the... source material. Like, I have just absolutely zero interest whatsoever.
For me, it's Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage is my least favorite actor of all time.
I'm curious about Gone Girl only because I have some friends who have read the book and said that the book is really, really good.
Gone Girl's getting good reviews right now.
Is it?
It is. I'm getting nines and stuff that. So, it's a long movie.
Yeah, it's 2.5 hours long. So that's what I'm not looking forward to.
It's going
to
be one of those that you dig in. But it's also one of those that's a crime thriller.
Yeah.
Like whodunit type film. So you're going to... It's going to string you along to the point where it would probably seem like maybe 2 hours instead of 2.5.
Because I figured that with the times that our theater is playing them, we can get both movies in one day.
Right.
But then it's like, do I really want to watch 4.5 hours of movies?
I'm good. I saw three movies in a row a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that was insane.
But I think this Left Behind movie is going to probably contend with The Identical for worst film of the year. And I don't want to give the impression that I prejudge a film before I go and see it. Because I usually don't. I give it a chance. But I really don't like Nicolas Cage. So... We'll have to wait and see, though, because not all religious source material films are bad.
No, but for me, this one, it's just... I feel like I'm going to be sitting there judging it the whole time.
Maybe you will. I don't know. Maybe you'll be really excited.
No, I'm already judging it, so...
All right.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening in, and thanks for being guinea pigs with me at the...
I like it.
Yeah, home tonight.
I dug it.
And maybe we can do this a little more frequently, switch off here and there or what have you. But so yeah, next week we've got only the two movies, Left Behind and Gone Girl. So unless one of the other movies that you saw comes out for rental, we might throw that in. But if not, it'll be a short one next
week.
We've
got Ghostbusters coming in too.
Yeah, the classic film series that they do. Yeah. Ghostbusters is this week's.
Which,
release.
I'd rather see Ghostbusters 2. I'm a big fan of Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, get it, Bray. You can't be choosy.
I'm just saying.
Anyway, thanks, folks. Tune in next time.
See you later.